No Direction and Paizo team up to bring you the Gen Con 2018 seminar coverage. No Direction would like to thank our advertising sponsor, the Roll for Combat Starfinder Actual Play Podcast. Listen at rollforcombat.com.
Hi, everybody. This is the Pathfinder Adventure Path Q&A. I hope that's why you're here and not just taking advantage of sitting down, which is an awesome thing to do. We'll start with some introductions, and then we'll get right to it. My name's Adam Daigle. I'm the managing developer for Pathfinder, and for the previous 6 years, I was in charge of Backmatter and running the running a couple of adventure paths.
All right, and I'm Ron Lundeen. I'm a developer primarily focusing on adventure paths. I came in to work on the Backmatter of adventure paths, and I moved to be sort of front and center for Tyrant's Grasp.
So the current adventure path that's running is War for the Crown, which is all about city intrigue and Tal'Dorei and changing the leadership of the nation. And the very last volume of that is downstairs in the booth right now. And if any of you are subscribers, you probably already have it. And following that one is... I'm going to restart. We're going to talk about what we've got coming up, and then we're going to open this up to questions. Following that is Return of the Rune Lords, where it is like a trilogy from our very first adventure path, Return of the Rune Lords, or Rise of the Rune Lords, and Shattered Star. So it builds off elements from there, but also there's other things that have happened since that have touched on some of that Rune Lord Bassilon information, like... Dave Gross's Lord of Runes novel had a little bit of had some stuff with Zutha in it. There was a Pathfinder Society scenario that dealt with Kroon. So it's kind of taking a lot of the stuff that we've established over the last 10 years and kind of like tying it up with a nice little bow. The first one of that is Secrets of Roderick's Cove, written by some guy named Adam Daigle.
We'll let anybody write these things.
I know, right? Well, first off, one of the things with this adventure path, it will get your PCs to 20th level. That's one thing that we've kind of bumped up around that like 17, 18 level thing. But in this one, we cut out one of the Backmatter articles, so there's only two. So we had 6 extra pages for the adventure, which allowed us to get to that spot. Secrets of Roderick's Cove will bring you all the way to level 5, which was kind of a challenge to fit in enough encounters to make that happen. following that is It Came from Hollow Mountain by Mike Schell. Oh, and also each of these has a Rune Lord on the cover. in this one, the PCs kind of, when the first, in, sorry, Secrets of Roderick's Cove starts off with a small town, Roderick's Cove, where there's like couple of rival gangs fighting, and the PCs get embroiled and stuff, and realize they start getting the hints that, oh, that Karzu guy from 10 years ago wasn't the only Rune Lord that was coming back. There's others that are stirring, and they start getting the hints to that. And It Came from Hollow Mountain. They have this idea, or they have this information, and they go to the Sahedron Council from Shattered Star to let them know, because these people are going to be the most well-versed in Thessalonian things.
So it's worth pointing out who those are. The assumption that you have run or played or something the previous two adventure paths.
That's the Sahedron Heroes.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Right.
Oh,
go
that's
ahead.
Right. The Sahedron Heroes. Under the assumption that you played this before with players, your own characters, other characters, and they have ascended to high levels. Some number of them is a group in world that is well known as the Sahedron Heroes. Those high level characters, I mean, they're not handling the low-level things because they're off doing much more heroic things, but they have a place to play. They work. They have a role to play, and they work with the Sahedron Council.
Yes,
there,
yeah. So. And so if you've played through those other adventure paths, you can, cherry-pick some of the characters from that and have them show up, and there's advice for how to incorporate them into this campaign in the player's guide and also in the second volume, It Came from Hollow Mountain. So after that one, we get into the third adventure, Rune Plague, written by Richard Pett. And this one takes you from levels 8 to 11. And now you've got proof that Rune Lords are coming back. And so you travel to some of Varusia's more important cities like Magnamara, Riddleport, Caramaga, and Curvosa to fight against some agents of one of these returning rune lords. I should also say that I should have said 5 minutes ago, there's going to be spoilers.
Spoilers.
Tons of spoilers. So if you're afraid of spoilers, I'd suggest earmuffs.
Or turning off or down the
right,
channel if you're on that. Yeah.
And the fourth adventure is Temple of the Peacock Spirit, written by Paizo's own Jason Keeley. And yep, that's Xander Gould showing off his abs. And in this one, they have already met a rune lord that is warning them about things Xander Gould's doing, and they travel. They discover Xander Gould's whereabouts and try to take him out, but they've realized that he's not exactly what they were expecting. The fifth one is The City Outside of Time, written by Paizo's own Amanda Hammond Coons. We don't have the full covers for this, but that is Bellamarius. And that's a big, crazy monster that you have to contend with in this, which is going to be super dangerous. In this one, they go to the city of Crystallon, which was first described in, I forget where, but way, way back when we were first talking about Varusia.
Lost Empires, maybe, is one
of them? No,
before then.
Before that.
Yeah, way before then.
It was in the second adventure path where it had that little gazetteer about Varusia. And so it's a city that's been trapped in a crystal dome, and the thing is, it's basically been removed from time. And this plays into a lot of the weird time travel stuff that goes on in this adventure path. The PCs have to find a way to get into that place, and they do it through the shadow plane. And they can either ally with Bellamarius or defeat her, depending on how things take place in the adventure. And then the final one is Rise of New Thassilon, written by Greg Vaughn. And that might be an Oliphant of Jandalay. And I don't think I've really looked at it that big. That's awesome. And there's Sorshin. So in this, Alasnest, which is the big bad of all of this, has got the Scepter of Ages and has tried to go back in time to take important events from Thassilon's history to fuel her own rune well to come to full power. And you should probably put her down because she's going to make Varusia
terrible.
That's
a bad idea.
And that's what you have in store for the next 6 months for Return of the Rune Lords. And then after that, we have
Tyrant's Grasp. We announced this, had some initial discussion about this. It's got out there in PaizoCon, but I wanted to lay out with a little more specificity, and maybe just a little bit more spoilery. For the Tyrant's Grasp adventure path. Ultimately, the imprisoned Tar Bafon, the Whispering Tyrant, gets a hold of a super weapon and wants to escape. That is bad. So the PCs want to put a stop to good old Whispering Tyrant there and the super weapon, which is sort of like the thing he holds in his hand. But he's been testing this super weapon out. The first of the adventures in Tyrant's Grasp is the Dead Roads, following up on the fact they'll let any old hack write these adventures. I wrote that one. It's going to take you from levels 1 to 4. I should also say that, to answer one of the questions that has come up, the Return of the Rune Lords goes to 20th level. Tyrant's Grasp does not. It is more of our typical structure that goes up to about 17th or 18th level at the end. It's the last of the first edition adventure paths. So in the first adventure of Tyrant's Grasp, which is called The Dead Roads, all of the PCs are dead. Yay! Game Masters win! PCs are dead! In fact, the PCs all awaken in a crypt, not knowing where they are or what has happened to them, and soon find that they are in the Boneyard. They have been transitioned bodily to the land of the dead and have to make their way out. That's what The Dead Roads is about. The second adventure, Eulogy for Roslar's Coffer, levels 5 through 7. Jason Keeley wrote that one as well. He did the Temple of Peacock Spirit. Yeah, he's a very, very busy guy. The PCs created their characters knowing they were from, either originally or very recently, from a little town called Roslar's Coffer. So the fact that the title of the second adventure is Eulogy for Roslar's Coffer is not a good sign. In fact, once they've walked the dead roads to return to the world, they find that Roslar's Coffer itself is a blasted wasteland filled with zombies and mutant animals and the like. Sorry for your town. And they have to investigate to find out what actually has happened to the town that was once theirs. And they find out that the Whispering Way, the vile necromancers that follow the Whispering Tyrant, has had a hand in destroying the town. Worse, they find out that the Whispering Way has plans to destroy other towns, and perhaps the PCs ought to get themselves pretty quickly to Vigil in Lastwall, the nation of paladins that Tarbifon has always had an opposition against, in order to warn them of this sort of threat. The third adventure, which is called Last Watch, by Larry Wilhelm, has done a lot of really good stuff for us. 8th through 10th level adventures, or 8th through 10th level adventure, the PCs they have learned more specifically that with this super weapon that he's got, it's called the Radiant Fire, Tarbifon intends to bust his way out of the prison of Gallowspire and lay waste to his enemies as he does so. So they go to Vigil in order to tell the paladins there, hey, this is what we found, this is what's going to happen. And in a perfect world, the paladins would say, great work, adventurers, thank you. Except the Whispering Tyrant's agents have been doing their best to subvert the leadership of Lastwall, and they find the paladins to be remarkably less receptive to their dire warnings than they might otherwise feel. They do meet a mysterious NPC that is a mysterious woman who's helping them out, who doesn't seem to be a great person herself, but certainly has no love for the Whispering Tyrant, is in fact a great deal of animus for him, and has a tenuous alliance with the PCs. They may learn in the fourth adventure called Gardens of Gallowspire, written by Crystal Frazier, that this is none other than Erasne, the Harlot Queen of Geb, who is forced into her undead state by the Whispering Tyrant. Not a fan. She's been nursing a rage for a long time, and by helping, allying herself with the PCs and working against the Whispering Tyrant, she's able to join them against him. In Gardens of Gallowspire, I'll tell you though, things do not go well. The PCs need something they don't have because it's on the other side of the world. Their conflict with Tarbifon is a little bit premature. Erasne does her best to intervene, but the PCs are does her best to intervene by hurling the PCs bodily across to the other side of the world. And in Adventure 5, Born by the Sun's Grace, written by Luis Loza, we have the PCs go to Arcadia. They have to reconstruct a weapon that Aridin made in Arcadia. This issue is going to have a double-length gazetteer article of a large nation in Arcadia. It's a part of the world we've had a lot of people anxious about. I want to thank Adam for being willing to loosen your grip just enough to let somebody else sort of explore and play in that playground. For adventures level 14 to 15, the PCs are 16th level by the time they're done and can return with this newfound lore to the last adventure, which is called Midwives to Death, written by John Compton. And in this, the PCs have learned the secret to stopping the Whispering Tyrant's deadly radiant fire, what it is that empowers that, how they can stop it, and they have to go up against him themselves to ensure that that he's unable to use the super weapon to continue to wreak the devastation that he's been wreaking throughout the adventure path. The best case scenario is that they're able to turn the power of the Radiant Fire against Tarbifon, and perhaps even kill him, but being a lich, there's always a ... to whenever you manage to defeat a powerful lich. But at that point, we've got several changes that have happened throughout sort of the campaign, the game world, that we'll be able to launch from as we go into the second edition.
And a lot of times, for those of you who've been to these this panel in previous years, a lot of times we announce what the next adventure path is going to be. We're not going to do that this time. So the first second edition adventure path will be a mystery for a few weeks. But we'll definitely have some fanfare and everything, and people will know what it is. We're just not announcing it right here at the show. So I hope that's not too much of a disappointment. Also, I wanted to say that James Jacobs, who wasn't able to make it here to Gen Con, our creative director and the mastermind behind almost all of our adventure paths in some way, shape, or form, is in the Twitch chat, from what I imagine, right? All right. He's going to be backing me up for questions that happen there, so that's going to be good. But I don't know how much interaction we'll have
him doing here.
So since this is a Q&A, we're going to go ahead and open this up to questions and answers.
Yeah. You can't give the title of the second edition adventure path. Are you starting over at number one or continuing the line?
I don't know if that's 100% decided yet, but definitely leaning to keeping the numbering normal. Because, I mean, we did that from 3.5 into Pathfinder, so why not keep that going? And also, as a collector that has all of them, like that continuity there.
Did you make that number 145?
Yes.
And everything that's gone before that is just gross. Gross. Anyway, sorry. The puns are free. Okay.
All right. Anyone else? Yes.
So I always am very interested in how campaigns end. And this is sort of an end with the edition. And some other campaigns and some other editions by some other companies have used different mechanics to sort of end the old edition and have some in-game play for the new edition. Is that what you're talking about with issue 144? There's going to be something that will change about Galarian that will be evident in the new rules?
We're not blowing up our setting at all.
No plague of spells or anything like that.
Now, there have been incremental changes throughout the 10 years that we've been, you know, writing things and publishing things about Galarian, like changes in leadership, like who is actually the Queen of Irisin right now? Who is leading Taldor right now? What happened with the World Wound being, was it closed or was it not? There's a lot of those decisions that we're going to make. But we're not changing anything dramatically. The campaign setting is going to stay the same. We're just going to kind of bring everyone back up to speed that might not have been reading along for the last 10 years and making some definitive decisions about how certain adventure paths have ended.
Yeah, there are some very natural points that occur. If you realize what we're doing is we're codifying some of the adventure paths that have happened. Something must have happened with the World Wound. We had a whole adventure path there. Even in very recently with something like Return of the Rune Lords, so the fact that the last adventure is named The Rise of New Thassilon, that hints at a change that we've got. The fact the description I've made through Tyrant's Grasp gives the impression that, gosh, this is a bad time to be in Last Wall. Yes, we're going to be codifying these recent changes as well as the ones that have gone over 10 years of adventures.
But nothing super dramatic. There's not going to be like a, you know, multi-year gap and things. We're just kind of snapping everything up to the present and filling people in.
If people ask, are we going to advance the timeline? And I say, you know, we advance the timeline.
Yeah.
One year for every year, and we're going to keep doing that.
Yeah. Yep.
Geography-wise, in Tyrant's Grasp, is it partially in Ustalav and going back and forth between there and Last Wall?
It is almost entirely lost. So the Rosalos Coffer exists. I mean, you'll see it on the map if you look, and it's the south and western part of Last Wall. So the trip doesn't. The journey into Ustalav is only for Gardens of Galaspire, okay. Which is a callback to the Shadows of Galaspire from Carrying Crown Adventure, and there are actually some thematic similarities there as well, in order to work through. But the only Ustalav part of it is the Whispering Tyrant's prison. Because he's so much of a forefront on the adventure. Otherwise, the Last Wall.
If the PCs are at least theoretically going up against Tarvoban, is there some in-adventure explanation why he doesn't just wish their hearts out?
I realize I've been messing up.
Yeah, I just realized that as well. We're supposed to be doing that. Yep.
The stream. Wait, ask that again so I can.
Is there an in Adventure Path explanation why if PCs are going up against Tarbophon, he doesn't just wish their hearts out?
Yeah. Okay. So the question was, if the PCs are going against Tarbophon, is there an in campaign reason why he doesn't just wish their hearts out?
Goodness gracious, yes, because he's certainly done that before. Part of the reason that the PCs are sheltered from a lot of the wrath the Whispering Tyrant can bear is two reasons. One, he's got his plans. He's got his Radiant Fire that he's enacting. Once he knows people are moving against him, though, the PCs have their chance because they're allied with another exceptionally powerful lich, which is Erasne, who is shielding them from a couple of things that the Whispering Tyrant might do. In one case in particular, very very directly shielding them from the effect from his wrath.
Anyone else?
Other questions?
Questions? Yeah.
I understand that there's not an aim to have a conversion guide between first edition and second edition. Does this mean that we won't get similar compilations like we did with Rise of the Rune Lords or Curse of the Crimson Throne once we go to the second edition?
The question was whether we'll continue to have
compilations
as we move forward. As our production schedule allows that, I mean, those have been successful and people have enjoyed them, so it stands to reason that we would continue doing that, but we don't have any...
Would they be in second edition rules, or would
yes.
they be a compilation of first edition rules?
Yeah, no, they would be in second edition rules.
Yeah, when we did the compilation for Rise of the Rune Lords, it was to take a 3.5 adventure path and update it to the Pathfinder rules. So the change in editions wouldn't stop us from doing that.
Okay.
Yes?
Does that mean there's a chance for Second Darkness, or do we still need to buy up all the back issues of Second Darkness first?
The question was if there is a chance for Second Darkness, or do you have to buy up all the back issues first? I encourage everyone to buy up all the back issues first anyway.
For everything!
Because I enjoy food in my apartment. There's always a chance for anything, but there's no plans on the table for that right now.
I know a lot of Second Darkness is flawed, but a lot of people really like the aspect of Galarian that it describes, so we kind of haven't been able to touch that or do anything new with that. So.
Right. Yeah, and we've done, 22 adventure paths at this point?
20, what is this, 20?
Yeah, and there's a lot of fan favorites, and kind of the decisions on which of those to make kind of comes down to a lot of different factors. So, no plans to announce, but who knows what the future will bring.
We don't feel compelled to go in order, right? It's not right. Because Second Darkness was the third, and we've done the first two. We must do that. I mean,
yeah.
we consider a lot of factors.
Yeah,
we decide whether
Carrion Crown problems. Next for who, right.
You said which one we're doing next?
No. Okay.
Oh, okay.
I said we could. Could. Okay. Yep.
Some of the adventure paths act as sequels, like this is the third Rune Lords one. Are there any other ones that you're really looking to, we'd like to do a second of exploring this area or this topic or this subject?
The question was that we've done, sequels before. Is there another adventure path that we want to... extend upon. I personally don't have any plans in my head. There's a lot of other places in the world that I'd rather play in than kind of picking up where other tracks were laid down.
It would be neat, though. I mean, that doesn't just exploring other pieces of the world doesn't preclude it follow-up on events that occurred something else. Especially now that what we're doing is we're codifying what happened. It would be easy enough to see, here's an adventure pass that occurs because of the leadership in Arisen being, XYZ.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
But an overt sequel to something that is sort of left unspecified. What we've done is each of these, we're making sure that we leave the threads out there that we can then pick up.
Yeah, and like we've explored so much lore and told so many stories in our adventure paths that isn't in the same way as in like our campaign settings. So you're totally right. We've got a lot of threads out there. So I don't have anything personally that I would do as a direct sequel, but definitely using elements of the stories we told for sure.
Okay.
One of the things, before we go to another question, one thing I want to make sure to mention that just sort of internally that I'm kind of excited about. Each of the Adventure Path volumes, as you know, has a series of back matter articles to help supplement it or to expand our world. We're taking a little bit of a different tack in Midwives to Death, number 144, the last of the first edition Adventure Path volumes. Rather than a bestiary or articles in the back of that, the whole 28-page section of the back of that, we're devoting to what we call the developer showcase. What we've done is we've gone to all the developers sort of in-house and said, okay, this is your last chance to get a 2-page spread to do whatever you want for the first edition rules, to stat up a character, to build a monster, to flesh out an organization, a paladin code, a series of phantoms that are sort of like... So there is, although there is some thematic link of all of those to the Whispering Tired Adventure Path, that last issue is a little bit of a playground and a love letter from all of the developers to the first edition. So I'm looking forward to doing it. We're already getting some of the things in from some of the developers for that, because we have some developers who are super eager and early about getting their stuff in for it. But
yeah, what's my deadline on that?
What's it? what's it? August 2nd. You're fine till August 2nd.
That was
yeah. No. So, end of the month.
Okay. Good. Yep.
So as developers, you just mentioned something that's an opportunity that is maybe unique to these two Adventure Paths. Is there another opportunity of some kind that you had that you could play with these two that maybe didn't exist before? And then on the flip side, are there any challenges with having these Adventure Paths that maybe have like a little bit of a different role than what the standard Adventure Path has been?
Developing these last first edition Adventure
Yes.
Paths, you mean?
Yes.
We do. The question was, is there any particular developer hurdles or roadblocks in developing these last couple of Adventure Paths? The one that I can see is that we have to make more assumptions in these two Adventure Paths than we do for the prior ones when we want to think about codifying the results. We have to think about how Return of the Rune Lords and Tyrant's Grasp is going to end and make changes that we codify in our world, but before many people had played them, and in some cases before the adventures are actually out. So there is a little bit of assumption there. What I'm worried about is people may think, well, because we have identified what's happened in the world as the result of Return of the Rune Lords and Tyrant's Grasp, you know, why play them? Well, because the assumption means that heroes stepped up and be the heroes that stepped up to experience that.
Yes. Oh.
Yeah.
I'll work in that order. Oh. Yeah, go ahead.
Since the campaign world advances 1 year for every real world year, do we kind of need to have a resolution to Razmir sometime soon before he just, you know, dies of old age naturally?
The question was, since the timeline does advance a year, you know, year by year, do we have to address Razmir? Razmir is one of Jason Bowman's...
Why would you think a god would die
yeah.
of old age?
It's
an actual living god upon the world.
Yeah.
Okay, Dad, we're getting eager nods, y'all. Uh-huh.
Razmir is one of Jason Bowman's babies, and which is maybe him being too busy is why we haven't done a ton of stuff with that. But I think he has some plans in place, but I don't know when those will ever come to fruition.
Do we get that resolved first, or does Eric finally get tied down and write about next first?
What's that?
Does
Eric have to... Yeah, Eric either has to write about next or let other people write about next, just like I've released my stranglehold on Arcadia. All right, in the back.
Do you guys have a favorite AP that's come out so far?
The question was, do we have a favorite AP that's come out so far? One thing that's difficult, well, here's what James's answer for this is, and I'm going to modify that slightly. James doesn't like to pick favorites among his children, which is reasonable, but I was a fan and freelancer before I was staff. so I can answer this, and I will answer this. I was really happy with the Ruins of Aslan Adventure Path, just because that was the first one that I got to completely outline and, like, orchestrate and all of that. So that's kind of that. That was my first baby, so I can like my first baby.
And for myself, because I had such connection with these as a player or a GM, those are the ones that resonate most with me. I mean, I can tell you that the Jade Regent and Giant Slayer aren't my favorite because I've never played or run either of those. I've skimmed them. I mean, they look awesome, but they just don't resonate with me the same way that Rise of the Rune Lords does, that Shattered Star does, Hell's Vengeance. Oh, Hell's Vengeance was awesome. some of the ones that I've played in, like the Curse of the Crimson Throne I played in, the Council of Thieves. I did really like Reign of Winter as well. So do I have a favorite? I think that the group I had that was sort of the most, threw the most twists and turns at me as a GM in a way that I found delightful and hoped that I delighted them was in Kingmaker. So... That probably among all of James's children, Kingmaker may be my favorite.
You had a question?
Yeah. So you were talking about codifying things before second edition. Is this something you're going to keep doing, like throughout future adventure paths, just kind of settling like what happened if it hasn't been played through?
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah.
And that good question specifically is, now that we're codifying all the things that have happened in the adventure path before, are we going to continue to make formal codifications as we go through the adventure paths throughout second edition?
I think as it sees fit. There's a lot of times that we have in campaign setting books or in different books in different lines kind of made certain assumptions that things had happened in a certain way. So we'll do that. The one thing that complicates this is we don't want to feel like people's older books are invalidated, which is why we've taken this certain approach to moving our canon forward. We don't want to make a big change and then make another book obsolete by doing so. So I think we're going to proceed as cautiously as possible, which I think we've kind of done a good job so far. So I think if we keep going with that, it might work.
Yeah, maybe that we have now, even before the edition change, we have products that need to assume that something has formally happened before. So we only formally codify when the need arises, not out of a policy to do so. And I suspect that's what we'll be doing going forward.
Oh, let's go there.
What are these venture paths due out? I don't
know if you guys are interested. The question was, when are these adventure paths due out? The very first volume of Return of the Rune Lords drops next month. And then that will proceed for the next 6 months, and the first Tyrant's Grasp,
I think, is February 2019, and then goes to wraps up August 2019. So about the time people are around the time people are really excited about the second edition hitting and diving into that is a good time to be saying goodbye to the last of the first edition Adventure Path issues.
For second edition, I'm still a long time out. Is the structure of the Adventure Path still good where it's at? Six-part adventure, back material in the back, first two, teen to 20.
Yeah, so the question was, for second edition, are the adventure paths going to essentially structurally be the same? We're exploring ways to tweak things. We've been doing the adventure paths in the same way, which is like kind of, if it's not broke, don't fix it. But I do like to innovate. I don't want to see things stay completely static, so a lot of that is still kind of open, but I really do like the structure that we've been using so far.
Yeah, we have, which we've played with quite a bit. We have fiction that's come in and then gone out, and we have for War for the Crown and a few adventure paths before that. It was sort of a consistent, you know, three articles and five monsters.
Yeah,
sort of good. Once we got to Return of the Rune Lords, we needed more space, so we got two articles and five monsters. Sometimes even less, because these get to be sort of lengthy adventures to get to the levels we need to. And we're going back to the three articles, five monsters in Tyrant's Grasp. But that's not to say that we wouldn't consider changing. Even if we do the same thing right away in second edition, that doesn't mean that by the second or third or so on adventure path, we might come up with some different way to sort of mix that up a little bit.
Yeah, I know, like James and I have, you know, chatted about this, and one thing that we would really like to do for all of the second edition adventure paths is make sure that you get to 20th in all of those. That would be something that would be really cool. We still got to tweak things. We got to see how the game ends up to know if that's something that we can absolutely do. The thing is, a lot of the structure of how the adventure paths are just based on a monthly production cycle and the reality of how much someone can work without like going insane. And pretty much having the adventure last about 50 to 55 pages is the capacity of an adventure developer. That's what you can do in that period of time. Like, while it might be awesome to have all 96 pages be adventure, that's just not something that's feasible unless we started 2 months ago.
Right. And we have not.
No.
Yeah.
Or I would not be here.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is the price point still aiming that same, or are we looking for a price hike?
Yeah, the question was if the price point's going to stay the same. That's really an Eric, and that's an executive question. But it seems like it would be a reasonable thing to keep it at least in that ballpark. Because I don't want to turn people off and have them not buy them.
We enjoy our jobs and yeah. would not like to see a big change. That, yeah.
Yep.
It takes a lot of time to get through an adventure path with a group, and I really like that Starfinder is doing the whole three-module adventure path. Mm-hmm. Is there any chance of that happening in Pathfinder as well?
So the question was whether we would be using Starfinder's experiment for the three-parters in Pathfinder. That was done in Starfinder as a way to, like, kind of... Because people have said that before. It's like, oh, man, your adventure path takes so long. It's like, we've been playing it for a year and 8 months. And so we're with Starfinder. Starfinder gave us the opportunity to be like, okay, let's see how people feel about that. And with... I guess the first one hasn't even come out yet. So we're going to kind of see like what the audience and what the readership feels about that before we try it elsewhere. You know, it's like, here's our experiment now. See the results before, but that's on the table.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really interested in hearing what people think about the three-part Starfinder adventure path that takes you from level 1 to level 7-ish.
7,
right?
Yeah.
And also how they feel about one that starts you at level 7 and then takes you to level 13-ish, I guess, 13-ish or so. Once those are done with, right now people can tell us quite a bit of what they think about the idea. What I'm looking forward to hearing is what people think about the experience of those.
Yeah. Anyone else? Yep.
Okay, so I asked about sequels earlier. Are there any places on Galarian that you really think they need to have an adventure path? They're just so rich they haven't been touched yet.
The question was, are there any places in Galarian that you feel the need that an adventure path needs to take place in? And I've like, every adventure path developer has multiple ideas of stories in their head, like, ready to, like, throw down when we need another one. And doing something in the Land of the Linorm Kings is something that I've definitely wanted to play around with before. Like, it just seems right for that kind of stuff.
I'm gonna take the question as, what's your favorite place you'd like to put an AP in? Yobaria. There's an awful lot of things going on in Yobaria. We have only just barely scratched the surface on. There's a ton of adventure potential there.
Yeah.
So in Tyrant's Grasp, is there any information on what the town was like before it was destroyed? So when the PCs come back, I can really crush their hopes and dreams?
The wicked yet phenomenal question is there going to be any information in Tyrant's Grasp about what the town of Rossler's Coffer is like before it gets before a eulogy for it is needed in order to crush the player's hopes and dreams of it? Yes and no. The town itself is mapped in its ruined state. We're intending to have it mapped in its ruined state in the second adventure. Extrapolating from that is not hard. Perhaps even worse, In the first adventure, it is not just your PCs who have died and moved on to the Boneyard, but it's lots of people they know from Roslar's coffer. That's going to be their first indication that things have gone horribly wrong. Oh, Mayor, you're here too. Oh, along with, you know, other people who could be your PCs, sort of, you know, family or friends. You want to pull in the pathos, do that, you know? Why are you still here and I seem to have passed on? What, you need to act on our behalf. So there are a lot of places to make that really visceral. The player's guide, I believe, touches on what your role in history in Roslar's coffer. It wants to set that up from the player's perspective. So that connection is, those connections are all there.
Yep.
I know that you guys recently started working with Roll20, putting APs on their service. Are there any plans to do any of like previous APs to go on to Roll20 that you guys are aware of?
The question was whether we're planning to do older APs that will go up on Roll20, and I honestly don't know the answer to that. That's really a question for our licensing people, but also a question for Roll20, just, you know, how much bandwidth they have to kind of work with some of the older things. But it'd be rad.
I put so much work in putting Shrink Geons on there.
Nice. Have you been having fun with Shrink Geons? I asked this personally.
I love Shrink Geons.
Awesome. Anyone else? We'll check time. Yeah, we got like 5 minutes. If no one has anything else.
No last question. Last of everything question.
Last of everything. Yep.
Can you kind of just kill the Abloness off? Then they're not the answer anymore.
Can we finally kill the Abloness off so they're not the answer anymore? What fun would that be?
You get to ask a different question?
He's referencing, there was the old editorial pit had on the whiteboard, it was a flowchart, and it said, did the Abolists do it? And then, wait, what was
it? Even before my time. So.
Yeah, I can't remember right now.
It was like, yes, circle back around to, no, it wasn't.
Right, yeah, it was basically a cycle.
To the fact that the Abolus...
Blame everything on the Abolus, yeah. See. That was before we blamed Cosmo.
All right. Yeah. We've got plenty more to blame things on than the Abolus. Yeah.
All right. Any other questions? All right. We're going to call it early. Thanks, Excellent. Everybody, for showing up.
Thank you all very much.